This show was previously broadcast live on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Please be advised that the opinions and views expressed by Richard Martin of Global Finance Advisory are entirely his own and do not necessarily represent those of the company, its affiliates, or its officers. Investments made on the basis of Mr. Martin's comments are unsolicited by the company and are at the sole risk and prejudice of the listener or investor.
Good morning, everybody. Richard Martin here from Singapore, and wishing you all a very pleasant week ahead, and I hope you had a good weekend. We need to start to talk today about a very disturbing development which has recently come to my attention, and I hope by so doing to answer the concerns of Bernadette Cheatham, who wrote in asking about money market funds. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let me be very clear about this. I do my best to avoid criticisms of scaremongering, and as you know, I have made some very serious recommendations of a fairly radical nature over the years, one of which, as you know, has been to liquidate your money market funds and put the commercial nature and put them into Treasury bill only money market funds, which I hope that you will have done by now. I had assumed that these would be sacrosanct. In other words, that unless there was a default of the United States government itself, you wouldn't have a problem with these funds, and I still believe that to be true. However, it now comes to my attention that new regulations have recently been proposed by the administration, which propose that money market fund managers will have the option to, quote, suspend redemptions to allow for the orderly liquidation of fund assets, end of quote. Now, what this means basically is that if there is a meltdown in the markets and people, for one reason or other, feel like withdrawing their money from the money market funds, that fund managers should have the option of refusing to allow those redemptions. And as you may know, even a Treasury bill money market fund, the Reserve Fund, which actually is one of the oldest funds in existence, if not the oldest money market fund, froze its own fund because it said it didn't have the assets, the liquid assets, with which to pay out investors. But that's a one-off thing, and if you were invested in the Treasury bill money market funds, it is 100% certain that you will get your money. These people have just got to get their act together, that's all. Now, when I read this, I was struck with sort of numb disbelief, because I'm thinking, well, you know, money market funds by their nature are liquid investments. They're short-term investments, provided the companies behind which the commercial paper stands don't go under, the money market funds should be good. Now, to be told that the administration are recommending that the managers should have the option to suspend these redemptions, I went and did some research and to try to find out who's behind this, because clearly Obama himself doesn't know anything about a money market fund. He probably wouldn't know what it was if it hit him in the face. So he depends, as usual, on other people. And I came up against this this rather nebulous group called the Group of 30, established in 1978, which is a private, non-profit, international body composed of very senior representatives of the private and public sectors and academia. The group's members meet in plenary sessions twice a year with select guests to discuss important economic, financial, and policy developments. So then I discovered that they issued a recent paper called Financial Reform, A Framework for Financial Stability, which was released on January the 15th, almost a year ago. They basically are saying that they propose that according to the SEC's Rule 22E, subsection 3A, they would permit a money market to suspend redemptions if, one, the fund's current price per share, calculated pursuant to Rule 2A7C, is less than the fund's stable net asset value per share. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is very important. I hope that you really are listening closely to this, because I'm sure this affects very many of you who have investments and have their money in the money market. In other words, what they're basically saying is if the fund should, as they say, break the buck and fall below $1, that automatically the managers should have the option to refuse redemptions to the investors, which they most certainly would do. And there's no question in my mind that if they have that option, they will avail themselves of it. Of course, they say the proposal does make the rather wry comment that, and I quote, "We understand the suspending redemptions may impose hardships on investors who rely on their ability to redeem shares." You don't say. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this leaves me in a dilemma in terms of what to recommend to you, because I do believe that the investments behind Treasury market, Treasury bill money market funds are sound. However, if you're not going to be able to get your money out, then it's pretty pointless having them in the first place. Now, I have no idea. I can tell you that if they do suspend redemptions, this could be this could be an indeterminate suspension, in which case you could not have access to your money for, you know, quite a while. It could be up to, I don't know, 3, 4, even 5 years. Not saying it would be, but it certainly could be. With this news, I'm going to have to revise my my advice to you, ladies and gentlemen, on the purpose, on the basis of the Treasury bill money market funds. Now, you know that I'm not in favor of the commercially based money market funds, so I'm not even going to discuss those. But in terms of your Treasury bill money market fund, it is, to my mind, almost a 100% certainty that at some point in the relatively near future, I am going to recommend that you liquidate those funds and keep your money in cash. Now, what would cause me to come up with that recommendation? Well, I think the answer is, if we see a meltdown in the markets, if we see a meltdown in the stock market or the bond market or one or other of the traded markets or more, I will almost certainly recommend that you liquidate your Treasury bill money market funds immediately. There will be no warning on this. It will be as a part of my following wake-up call. In other words, if things starts to cascade down on Tuesday or Wednesday, the Friday's call will be the one where I will tell you that I think you should liquidate your money market funds. I'm not even at the point at which I say I hope it isn't going to happen, because I'm almost sure that it is. I cannot allow you to sit with these funds on the understanding that you might have them frozen by the managers because the administration said it was okay. So anyway, I just wanted you to know this. Please bear it in mind. Be steeled, as it were, for an advice by me to liquidate these things. And when I do, you better think about it now, because when I come up with that information, with that advice, there won't be any warning. It won't be maybe in a couple of weeks or whatever. You should do it immediately. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry, it's not me. I didn't make this stipulation, but one way or another, it seems that these people are out to get you. It seems they want your money, and one way or another, if we're not very careful, they're going to get it. We'll talk about what they might confiscate in a later show. We don't really want to do that today, but there are certainly things you need to be aware of, and ways in which these desperate men, which they are, by the way, these government people who are busy grabbing all your money and turning all your country's wealth into debt, that there are ways in which they can get your money, and believe me, they're going to try. This is no longer a friendly chat. This is a war between you, the private American citizen, and your government, and I'm determined that you should win this war. So believe me, I'm on your side. All right. This is Richard Martin. It is the wake-up call, and if you want to call in with questions, which people should please feel free to do, it is a toll-free number to call, 888-873-4643. Once more, the toll-free number is 888-873-4643. If you would like to email your questions and comments in, please do that. The email address is rm@gfawd.com. Once more, the email address, RM for Richard Martin, GFAWD for Global Financial Advisory Wealth Design. Again, the email address is rm@gfawd.com. And finally, of course, if you want to call me in private about your financial situation, you may do that by calling a number in Sarasota, Florida, which will be call forwarded automatically to me in Singapore. And the number is area code 941-441-1682. Once more, 941-441-1682. Okay, so just a quick word about my Sunday show. Last Sunday we had a nice discussion, and we talked about the whys and wherefores, the pros and cons of increasing taxes, whether it was morally justified or economically justified or socially justified, basically for or against. We had a few calls, and that was fun. This coming Sunday, I had said, and I told you, I think on Monday, I told my people on Sunday in the show, that we would be talking about walking away from your mortgages, whether it was a moral thing to do, whether it was, in fact, a financially prudent thing to do, and there's a very clear dividing line between those who are for and those who are against. And by sheer coincidence, I mean, absolutely, I had no inkling that this was going to happen, but this coming Sunday's New York Times Magazine is going to have an article on this very subject. So I do urge you to read it. I'll give you a quick précis of what the actual article is about. It basically discusses these record numbers of people who continue to default, whether or not they have a responsibility to make good. The housing collapse left 10.7 million families owing more than their homes are worth as of today. Morgan Stanley, and they make the point that Morgan Stanley recently decided to stop making payments on its 5 San Francisco office buildings. The stakes are a little bit higher there, but the claim is that the moral implications are identical. They're just not going to make the payments. Nobody really says that businesses are immoral when they don't do that. It's a business decision, as they describe it, but of course, President Obama just recently urged homeowners to follow what he called the responsible course. In other words, putting a lot of moral pressure on homeowners to do what Morgan Stanley has done with impunity. The consequences for not getting rid of your home could, especially in places like California, where there was a big, big bubble which burst, you could theoretically, and I'm quoting from the article right now, which is, I don't have the complete article, but there's a sort of preview of it, And it says that you could theoretically, and I quote, theoretically have to wait 60 years to recover your equity. So on the other hand, if you walk, you could rent a similar house for a pittance of your monthly mortgage. So the stakes are really quite big in this respect. Another point they make is that mortgage holders do sign a promissory note, which is a promise to pay, but the contract explicitly details the penalty for non-payment, surrender of the property. The borrower isn't escaping the consequences, he is suffering them. And given that nearly, and again I'm quoting from the article, given that nearly a quarter of mortgages are underwater and that 10% of mortgages are delinquent, a person called White, and I don't know where he comes from, he comes from earlier in the article here. Anyway, Mr. White of the University of Arizona is surprised that more people haven't walked. Homeowners operate under what is called powerful moral constraint, while lenders are busily trying to maximize profits. No one says defaulting on a contract is pretty, or that in a perfectly functioning society, defaults would be the rule. But to put the onus for restraint on ordinary homeowners seems rather strange. If the Mortgage Bankers Association is against defaults, its members, presumably the experts in such matters, might take better care not to lend people more than their homes are worth. Well, that's it. Ladies and gentlemen, you can read the article, prepare yourselves, and come to me at 9 p.m. on Sunday with the usual toll-free number and have lots of questions and comments and ideas. And you should be inspired by the article, which you will have read during the day from your Sunday Times. Okay, well, let's have a look. Got some mail, quite a lot of mail this week, so I'm going to read you something which is rather a long screed, actually, from somebody who wishes to remain anonymous, therefore he calls himself Anon. But it was really interesting, and so I thought I would just let you have it. Not very, very long, but certainly worth your consideration, ladies and gentlemen. Caught up with an old friend last night. Her husband has a pretty good job in a hospital, but recently was forced to take a 10% pay cut. So, not a huge issue, but it was largely every bit of their fun money. And in talking with my uncle and another friend of mine, there just is a ton of people out there that have no money. My business has seen signs of life of late, but I haven't had one order go through that didn't seem to turn into a problem. Had at least three people write about one of my products in the last week. Owned the product for 3 years, and I bet I've had that many questions over that time frame. The product in question is $13. People really worry about what they're getting. We lost one of our few plants here last night. Honestly, didn't catch the whole story. Think they're going to pay the workers, but close the plant until orders start to come back in. My best friend was recently asked to take a pay cut. Right or wrong, he has declined. He gets most of the entire business done, loved by most all, and makes very little per hour. I know most of the bartenders there are hurting as well, but never known too many that were good with money. But in talking numbers with my friend, things aren't good. It's a band hall, and sometimes they can hit a lick, but most nights it's just paying the bills. Another friend recently said he had one of his worst months ever. He's not rehiring. He and his wife work out of the place, not taking money out of the place, in forever. Another friend is in electronic supplies for manufacturing. You can imagine his sales have been almost nothing of late, and he's been doing this 20 years. One of his companies has started sending him a paycheck as they need him out there pitching. They obviously aren't doing that great if they will pay a salesperson instead of hiring another. I know not everyone is hurting. Friend got back from Costa Rica today. I mean, let's face it, only 20% of us are out of work, but when I look around at mostly everyone I know, their jobs are troublesome, orders aren't coming in, pay cuts, clients going out of business, food costs continue to climb, tension in the workplace. To me, it really feels it's coming. Not saying there aren't stocks to buy or this is a great time to buy gold or short the market, just saying I see zero to make me think things are looking up. People like one I know is making $60,000 and that's a new job. And the company is barely getting by and they're doing so mostly off one contract. And that company's share price says it's in trouble. They have no equity in their house and two girls in college. I know how tight money is in that house, and I know he has to it has to worry him, and it's already causing tension in the house. As I wrote this rambling thought, looked at my Facebook, and friend has a post saying she needs a job. Talked to two people yesterday that are going to start trying to sell some assets, as the ends just aren't meeting. One friend who is a lawyer is doing well. Another who is as well recently closed his video business of 15 years as it just wasn't making enough to worry about. Not a huge deal, but I think four more people out of work and more retail space for rent. And I'm starting to see more tension from people facing this stress, some with anger, some with depression. I mean, when you're having to dip into savings, worried if you have a job in 6 months, can't pay your power bill, how can you not get completely stressed? I just see zero recovery, nor do I see anything changing that's going to make things better. Like one of my oldest friends worked in mills for maybe 40 years. Wife works at Dollar General, I think. They get by, and he's good with his money, but one of the last mills closed recently, the town was never much. It's grown some, but it's all Walmart. And he recently lost their main industry of almost 100 years. You look at Gadsden, Fort Payne, Selma, Birmingham, they all used to have plants. Well, I know we are now mostly a service economy, and I know I've been on this rent for years now. We have to make something. I mean, the garment district in New York City is all but gone. That should speak volumes to people. Around here, there used to be a ton of farms. There are so few, it's not even funny now. It's big business. Years ago, chicken houses became about the best way to make money on farmland. Big business has about made the small guys have to take so much nonsense, it just wasn't worth it. I wish I could say I see signs of recovery, but really, I don't. Huntsville has escaped the recession, yet the whole town is dead, save one little strip mall. Lady told me the other day a Walmart in a smaller town nearby only had two lanes open on Christmas Eve. Guntsville used to be the big processor of grain and some shipping, nothing huge, but river and farms and timber, not even sure the grain plants are still open. This still just isn't going to work, people, and I know I'm telling the few that understand this. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a burger joint or Walmart. People need their yard cut. But we can't make a living, you cutting my grass and I cutting yours. We all can't buy investment properties and the other half build them. We all can't work at Walmart. We shipped every job we can across the borders. We borrowed and consumed all we could. Our government seems to have completely sold us out. Things just aren't getting better until we change what we're doing. Until you really start seeing buy local, until you see that, then what you've seen over all of my lifetime is American wasting its future. Yes, not so good, and please forgive the somewhat lax syntax, but I guess people aren't always very aware of their writing skills when they write emails. You know, people, especially in the U.S., are so blind to the fact that a huge majority of people are living beyond their means. The data shows it. Still, after 18 months of crisis, America has the highest debt loads in history. As much as the world has envied the Americans with their higher incomes, it's been at the expense of their personal and national finances. Let's look at some examples of their upcoming bills and problems. 30 million medically uninsured. A huge illegal alien problem, warmongering, a broken social security system, poor education systems, a broken highway trust fund, and on and on. The U.S. is really a bankrupt nation born out of excessive self-interest and drunken materialism. What recovery would we have without government stimulus, lies and manipulation? The Fed buys treasuries to keep short-term rates low and prints money to keep banks lending. On Christmas Eve, Congress passed a health care bill that will add trillions to the deficit and give billions to GMAC to keep it afloat. Freddie and Fannie are on government life support. The only reason banks are reporting decent numbers is for the change in accounting rules that allow them to mark to estimated value instead of mark to market real value on the books. Ladies and gentlemen, the U.S. is sowing the seeds of the next crisis right now by propping up these ailing banks and encouraging excessive risk. We still have zero interest rates, massive amounts of liquidity, manipulation of short-term rates, manipulation of long-term rates, bailouts galore a full 15 months after Lehman Brothers collapsed. This is pure insanity. The recession has blown a huge hole in the U.S. labor market. 7.2 million jobs lost so far. Not only must the U.S. restore the 7.2 million lost jobs, but it must also create employment for several million more Americans who have joined the labor pool as a result of population growth. The U.S. will have to add 581,000 jobs every month for 2 years. And this is a pace that it hasn't matched since the post-war boom of the 1950s. The economy shed 11,000 jobs in November, though it was apparently revised slightly up. The economy has shed 85,000 jobs in December, despite the pundits that were calling for an actual increase in jobs, 2,500, 5,000, 50,000, 100,000, some we were even talking 200,000 or 300,000 jobs added to the payrolls. Ladies and gentlemen, 85,000 jobs were eliminated in the month of December. And the unemployment rate remains at 10%. And this information came out a few minutes ago. You know, this perpetual Ponzi, this is how it works, by the way, until it doesn't. These are the steps. One, the government becomes the employer, entitlement master, and housing provider of first, last, and only resort. Two, in order to fund its largesse, it issues debt. Tons of it, trillions of dollars of it. Three, the Fed, itself a creation of Uncle Sam's vivid imagination, buys the government's infinite debt using freshly flung, easily created money. Four, the government worker bees, entitlement beneficiaries and other hangers-on and sycophants, spend the money that Uncle hands them and also borrows jillions more from McMansions and McAutos, keeping those asset prices ever rising. Five, when the banks and Wall Street shysters blow up from time to time, as they also participate in the Ponzi party, Uncle and the Fed jump in and bail them out too, again, keeping asset prices levitated. Well, this, ladies and gentlemen, is going to end, and it's going to end horrendously badly. I cannot even begin to describe how bad it's going to be. I will describe it, but right now I believe we have to go to a break, and we will be back very shortly.
You are listening to Progressive Radio Network.
Thoughtful, provocative, cutting edge. The Ask Dr. Eisenstein Show. Other doctors will scare you of the disease. Dr. Eisenstein will scare you of their treatment. Dr. Eisenstein is a practicing physician for almost 40 years and graduate of several prestigious medical schools. Since 1973, he has been the medical director of Home First Health Services in Chicago. The majority of the 23,000 families in this practice deliver their babies at home, breastfeed their children, choose not to vaccinate, and use natural treatments whenever possible.
Hi, I am Dr. Meir Eisenstein. If you want to hear the other side of the story, tune in every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for an hour of questions, answers, and lively discussion. Call me with your medical questions. I would love to talk with you.
Brand new to the Progressive Radio Network comes Call In Sundays. Call in to discuss important topics with some of your favorite PRN hosts. At 4 o'clock, Women's Healing Circle with Cheryl Selman, a show where women can find natural ways to regain hormonal health and optimal well-being. At 5 o'clock, call Mitchell Raven and become re-empowered in vital areas of your life. Mitchell's blend of holistic psychology are what made him the successful therapist, counselor, and life coach he is today. At 6 o'clock, the Supernatural Teen Show will discuss what it's like to be an environmentally aware teenager in America. Call in and share their eco-passion. At 7 o'clock, Ask a Vegan with Karen Hartglass. Find out the specifics of being a vegan and how animal products contribute to disease and environmental deterioration. At 8 o'clock, Talk Back with Gary Knoll. He's back to answer your questions regarding wellness, health, and nutrition. You've got questions, he's got answers. At 9 o'clock, Richard Martin's Discussion Group. Richard presents his insights on our turbulent economic future. There you have it, a six-hour block of new and original programming for you, our loyal listeners. Every Sunday, 4 to 10. Keep those calls coming.
This is Orly Cotell with Sierra Club Radio. Tune in Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com to hear interviews with green authors, activists, politicians, celebrities, and more.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Richard Martin back with you. Richard Martin's Wake Up Call, the toll-free number for all your calls, which I know you're getting ready to make, is 888-873-4643. Once more, 888-873-4643. You can call anytime, and I'll be glad to talk to you. Ron Paul recently had this to say, and I quote, "The Austrian free market economists use common sense principles. You cannot spend your way out of a recession. You cannot regulate the economy into oblivion and expect it to function. You cannot tax people and businesses to the point of near slavery and expect them to keep producing. You cannot create an abundance of money out of thin air without making all that paper worthless. The government cannot make up for rising unemployment by just hiring all the out-of-work people to be bureaucrats or sending them unemployment checks forever. You cannot live beyond your means indefinitely. The economy must actually produce something others are willing to buy. Government growth is the opposite of all these things. Bureaucrats are loath to face these unpleasant but obvious realities. It is much more appealing to wave their magic wand of regulation and public spending and divert blame elsewhere." Good for Ron Paul. I see his opinions and attitudes are really hitting the mainstream head on right now. Let's see how much progress he makes in the next couple of years before the elections start to kick in again. Okay, another piece of mail here from Peter Marciano, and this is what Peter has to say. "Hello, Richard. I swear as a nation we are lemmings, crammed into the herd and waiting our turn to leap off the cliff. To be honest, it's not the worst scenario. I mean, how and when is anyone in this nation going to wake up? And I agree completely with the article that a small percentage of Americans, if they took action, would make an incredible difference. Things here have not gotten bad enough. I read an article recently that the whistleblower from UBS that notified the SEC of insider trading was recently sentenced to 48 months in prison. Ironically, the announcement of this sentence was released at the same exact time that Obama was playing golf with a UBS executive. UBS was fined and no one other than the whistleblower was jailed. Justice American style. Peter. Thank you, Peter. Always to the point and direct, as I would expect coming from you. All right, I had a couple of questions about this money market concern, and I'm going to deal with them right now. They just come through on my email. One is from Rosemary Utica, who says, "Hello, Richard. How about the Treasury Direct account? Will it too refuse to refund one's money when the bill falls due? Thanks for the wake-up call, Rosemary." May I make it very clear, ladies and gentlemen, that I am not impugning the value of Treasury bills per se. If you go out and buy Treasury bills, this will have nothing to do with the Treasury bill money market funds. Treasury bill money market funds are simply a way for you to deposit money into an account where you had instant access to the money any time for any reason. In other words, to buy things, to withdraw, to buy investments. This money is normally available at a moment's notice. If they freeze those funds, the funds themselves will be not available to you, but those of you who are simply holding the Treasury bills themselves without going through a fund, where normally you would have to wait until they mature, which normally would be a matter of just a few days, you should be fine. If you have the bills, you should be fine. So don't worry about anything to do with direct investments in Treasury bills. Bob Barkey wrote in saying, "Thank you, Richard, for the information on money market funds. We can always count on you to keep us informed. Do you think it is a good idea for us to move our money from money market funds to checking accounts? Thank you, Bob." Bob, I'm sorry if I didn't make this absolutely clear. Do nothing now, provided you have Treasury bill money market funds. There is no reason that I can see for you at this present moment to make any move, because there's no scenario in the immediate future that I foresee whereby there might be a panic and a run on these funds, enabling the managers to simply refuse redemptions. When I feel that is imminent, I will let you know. And then, yes, put your money into your checking account, which presumably and hopefully is still being insured by the FDIC up to $250,000. So the answer is yes, at that point it would. Okay. Then I had John Nevin, who wrote in saying, "Richard, I'm listening right now to you say get out of the Treasury-based money market funds and for good reason." No, John, I'm not saying that. I'm saying be prepared to do so if and when the time comes when it looks like there's going to be a run on these things. It hasn't come to that yet. So no, not right now. So I continue your email. "With the non-IRA treasury funds I have with Vanguard, that is easy enough, but I am to park the money where? In the bank, which also might go bust." Now don't forget, John, you'll have security from the FDIC if ever that were to happen. But we will talk about that on another show, exactly what you need to do with your money, which is, of course, a function for each individual person and how they feel about their money. But nevertheless, we'll try and make some generalizations if we can. What about the IRA Treasury Fund? I cannot liquidate that. What other Vanguard fund could I park that in? Right now, you can't. You must hang on to your Treasury Fund. And if we do need to liquidate the Treasury bill money market funds out of IRAs, it may be the time to liquidate your IRAs and take the money and pay the penalty and the tax. This is a very serious consideration and one which I had hoped not to have to make. It may be that by the time we come to liquidate those funds, there may be bond investments that we can move into. But right now, don't worry. Don't do anything. You should be fine, I think. So thank you for the question, folks, pertaining to the money market funds. Let's have a look at a few more emails that I have received. Before I forget, I wanted to make a little bit of a comment about Ben Bernanke, who spoke on Sunday, blaming everybody but himself for the problems. He, of course, is a prime mover in the very fact that these problems exist, but his hubris prevents him from even the vaguest oblique admission of any guilt or participation in the problem. It seems, frankly, that the primary qualification of any chairman of the Federal Reserve is the ability never to admit error, no matter how damning the evidence. As I've explained many times, when Alan Greenspan was Fed chairman, he set the standard for implausible deniability. But frankly, Bernanke last week, he did the maestro one better. He came out with his tortured academic dissertation, and he explicitly denied any Fed culpability for inflating the housing bubble and for the financial crisis. But I don't think anybody was frankly convinced, despite his best efforts. I mean, by taking such an absurd stand, he's destroyed any credibility that he may have had left. In his presentation to the National Economic Club, he claimed that the ultra-low interest rates in the early Bush years were appropriate given the conditions at the time, and that they therefore didn't contribute to the housing bubble. Instead, he laid blame squarely at the feet of what he called an under-regulated financial sector, which had designed and sold unconventional and exotic mortgage products, such as the adjustable rate and interest-only mortgages. And according to Ben Bernanke, it was these irresponsible lenders, who, by the way, he now hopes to regulate, not low interest rates, that caused the housing bubble. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there's two huge flaws in this line of reasoning. First of all, if these mortgages were such a problem, why didn't the Fed do something to rein in their use? They had at their disposal and continues to have all the powers they need to prevent mortgage lending altogether. In other words, making a loan to value of zero instead of 110%, which they nodded their assent to without saying anything. I mean, how many people are so simply stupid that they don't understand this? I mean, does Ben Bernanke think everybody's a complete moron? You know, when given an opportunity to speak about the widespread use of arms in congressional testimony, former Chairman Greenspan had nothing but praise for these products. He claimed that these offerings allowed savvy home buyers to save money and better manage their personal balance sheets. And at the time that Greenspan made these statements, Bernanke was serving as a Fed governor. And from neither that position nor his later role as chairman of President Bush's Council of Economic Advisers did Bernanke ever utter a scornful phrase about the mortgages he now condemns in hindsight. What a hypocrite. All right, let's take a few more emails here. Peter again, Peter Marciano, who's been active at the computer, it seems. You can sell a president through an effective marketing campaign. You can also sell his policies the same way. Neither the man nor the measures need truthfully be anything like the image you paint of them, no more than a car or a detergent need anything but a feel-good recognition factor. Both the person and the acts only need to resemble as much as possible what people would like them to be. The best liar wins. The secret of life is honesty and fair dealing. If you can fake that, you've got it made, said Groucho. That's not some sort of accident. It's what the country was built on. And he's quoted from Ilagi from The Automatic Earth, January the 4th, 2010. Very propitious, I should say, Peter. Thank you very much for that. Andrew Celsius came in with, quote, just some individual street-level economic factoids. One. As of January the 1st, the amount I have to pay into my wife's employer's health insurance plan has gone up 30%. This means that 80% of the remaining extended unemployment benefits I receive will go directly to an insurance company. I suspect an awful lot of unemployment insurance is actually functioning as federal, state-subsidized health insurance. I can't tell and strongly doubt whether the great change makers in Washington have done anything to help me. No, he can't. 2. Visited Great Neck, New York recently, a wealthy suburb of New York City on the north shore of Long Island, and noticed that ever more small storefronts are empty. I'd estimate conservatively at least 30% plus. Robinhood of assured profit forest, taking from the public and giving to the private? Tally-ho, Andrew Celsius. And then we get an email from Ronnie Davis. If the Fed is carrying $2.5 trillion on their balance sheet, the U.S. deficit stands at $52 trillion, so how close are we to default? And should we default, where does one find safe harbor? Well, Ronnie, don't want to go back to the business of leaving the United States and going living somewhere else, but I would say that right now Singapore offers me safe harbor. Now, let me not just overestimate this here. Singapore has its own share of problems. Some of the statistics that have come out recently are pretty grim. But as I always say, however bad it gets in Asia, Asia is the creditor part of the world that America was in the 1930s. Therefore, they will bounce back a lot faster. I think the question to your answer, your answer to your question is more a function of where the money goes. I think that when the United States defaults, as I fear that it will, I think the answer is that we will by that time have purchased assets, or at least foreign currencies, to take us out of that situation. It won't happen in the next 2 or 3 years or 4 years, so it isn't going to be that great or that urgent of a decision. But technically, the Fed has already defaulted. If the Fed was a company, it would have had to declare Chapter 11 by now, because nobody would lend it any money, and there wouldn't be any way in which it could carry on doing business. But life is such that, the country with the world's reserve currency is able to soldier on, but it's not going to last, so be aware of that. Even in this so-called recovery that is being spun so heavily on financial TV, employment is still down 5.2%. The retail spending is down 8.4%. New single-family home sales, 73.3%. Core new orders, 19.6%. Production, 11.5%. But somehow these numbers have moved up very slightly, so they use that as an excuse to call it a recovery rather than a recession. But that's frankly, ladies and gentlemen, nothing more than a distinction without a difference. And remember, this is all we've got from these stimulus plans. The first-time home buyer credit, cash for clunkers, the foreclosure moratoria, zero interest rates, unprecedented quantitative easing, better known as money printing, mortgage-backed security purchases, treasury bond purchases, virtual government takeover of the housing market, massive aid to the GSEs and record deficit. All that has been achieved through all this is to shift private debt burdens to the federal government. Now, understand this well, ladies and gentlemen. If you do not understand anything about what it means for the government to buy bonds or take over the housing market or give aid to the GSEs, understand that the basic problem here is that the government, through this crisis, has simply lifted off the private sector its debts, that's to say, from the companies which are too big to fail, and put it on your backs, ladies and gentlemen. You, the taxpayers, are now shouldering the burdens of the big banks and the big companies that are so-called too big to fail. You have their debts. They belong to you. And with all that, it's impossible for the economy to stand on its own once these artificial supports are removed and the government no longer backstops all these failing companies. you know, these debts, which of course are your debts and my, well, they used to be my debts until I left the United States, but these debts will all be resolved. Yes, they will. And they can only be resolved in two ways, either by inflation or by default. There is no other way. Nothing else will do. Nothing else will take care of this problem, ladies and gentlemen. So I need to tell you these things. I need you to understand them, because the whole of the press machine, the media, are ranged around trying to take you off the scent, trying to take you off track, make you believe that there is a recovery, make you believe that these ridiculous moves by the government are having some effect, when in fact they are not. And you can see just by today's unemployment figures, the unemployment rate is getting worse. 85,000 jobs were lost in the month of December. December is supposed to be a good month. They're supposed to take on extra labor for the Christmas shopping period. And as I explained to you, shortly after that period began, some three-fifths of all companies were laying off the help that they had taken on in anticipation of buying in the Christmas buying period. So it is hardly of any surprise that there is an $85,000 shortfall in the unemployment figures. And it's getting worse. Believe me, it's getting much worse. There is no light at the end of any tunnel here. So please be aware, be very clear about this. No matter what you read and what you hear, this shrill yelling of the media that go out and buy, you know, go out and buy a house, you know, things are getting better, the housing market is bottoming. Nothing could be further from the truth. There are millions and millions and millions of dollars of housing kept off the balance sheets of banks and mortgage companies, which are being ready to be thrown onto the market, which you and I know nothing about. We just know that they exist. We don't know how many of them there are. We don't know where they are even. But they're there, ladies and gentlemen, and they will come onto the market, and they will depress prices even further. Whatever, again, you're being told by that ridiculous Lawrence Young of the National Association of Realtors, it's all pie in the sky. All right, well, I thought that in my putting on my hat as an advisor and somebody who gives you ways to do things, save money, basically organize yourselves, I would give you some kind of a guide here as to how to go to the shopping supermarket and buy your foods and groceries and to spend as little money as you possibly can. And I have basically a 20-point plan here for you to enjoy. So if you want to take notes, you may, but basically this is the 20-point plan for people to save money in the supermarket. Number one, take a shopping list. To keep the list to a minimum, plan your meals for the week and then list the ingredients you need to buy. Stick to your list, but be flexible. Take advantage of store specials you come across when you're inside the store. And be flexible about eliminating other items from your list to replace with the specials that you come across. Be creative, in other words. Number two, pay attention to what you have on hand, especially perishables. That way you won't have to throw away unused food. Number three, learn the layout of your grocery store. Sneaky secret. Stores put dairy products and meat in the back of the store to force you to walk through aisles of temptation, processed foods sold at higher markups to get there. If you're making a quick trip for the milk, keep this in mind and be resolute. Buy only milk. Number four, eat first. This tried and true tactic bears repeating. Going to the grocery store hungry is one reason we buy on impulse. Skip non-essentials. Number 5, drink tap water. Almost all municipal water in America is so good that nobody ever needs to drink water from Italy or France, or Maine for that matter. Getting the recommended 8 glasses a day from bottled water costs as much as $1,400 annually. If you don't like the taste of your local water, buy a faucet filter or filtering pitcher. 6. Don't buy processed food. It costs more than meals you put together yourself from basic ingredients and generally is not as nutritious. 7. Grate your own. Like processed foods, pre-grated carrots, cheese, etc. cost more and often don't taste as fresh. 8. Skip the pre-cuts. Cut meat and produce yourself rather than buying individual servings or pieces. 9. Clean your own fish. It's cheaper per pound of edible fish to buy whole fish, the smaller varieties of course, at the market and then remove the head, tail, etc. at home. 10. Don't buy toiletries at the grocery store. Make a separate list of toiletries and paper products for the discount stores such as Costco, BJ's and Sam's Club where they'll cost 20 to 40% less. Shopping strategies. Number 11. Don't be fooled by phony sales. Sneaky secret. Items displayed on the ends of aisles aren't necessarily on sale. Manufacturers of those items pay for those prime display locations. Better, compare prices in the main aisles where products compete against each other. 12. Know when to buy in bulk. Only buy groceries you know that you'll need before they go bad. Non-perishables are the safest to buy in bulk. Also, just because an item is available in a larger size doesn't mean it's cheaper. Take a calculator to the supermarket to check unit prices by dividing price by quantity. 13. Buy generic. You can almost always save money by choosing a store label or little-known brand instead of a well-known brand. In some cases, particularly with items such as orange juice and condiments, the savings can be tremendous. 14. Stoop and reach. Sneaky secret. Food manufacturers pay for prime eye-level shelf space at grocery stores, and their prices reflect it. So look high and low, literally, for comparable items on other shelves. 15. Buy must-go food. Bypass the more expensive fresh-baked bread and reach for the day-old selection. Keep it in the freezer for toasting. Also, most bakery departments will discount fresh items drastically as the end of the day nears. You may just have to ask. Stores routinely discount dairy, baked goods, produce, and meat as these items approach their sell-by dates or become less attractive. Think slightly bruised apples or crushed bread. These items are tasty and perfectly safe to eat even several days after purchase. Ask the staff at your supermarket when they mark items down. Time your shopping accordingly. 16. Shop less often. Shoppers make quick trips to the store, usually purchase more than they planned. If you go to the store 3 times a week and spend $10 on impulse buys each trip, that adds up to $120 extra a month. But if you only go once a week and spend the same $10 on impulse buys each time, you'll spend $40 a month on impulse buys. That saves you $80 a month or $960 a year. 17. Use the buddy system. Save money by sharing costs with someone else. Examples: split 2-for-1 offers, the contents of large, well-priced packages, such as bags of potatoes, share the price of gas to the supermarket, maximize coupons. 18. Check all sources for coupons. Americans saved an estimated $30 billion with manufacturers' coupons last year. Also, take advantage of double and triple coupons policies at local supermarkets. Be checkout savvy. 19. Fight checkout temptation. The candy gadgets and magazines right around the cash registers are high-profit items for the store and the least useful to you. And resist. 20. Keep a close eye on the scanner. Americans lose from $1 billion to $3 billion a year on scanning discrepancies. Scanners are not always reset with the current sales prices, so your chance of being charged the full price on the sales item is high. There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, time to go. Talk to you again on Friday. This is Richard Martin saying bye-bye till then.